Almost there. So close. Hey, we're live. Hey, folks. Thanks for tuning into the BAMP podcast, our second episode of Owen Explains It All. And before we go any further, I love that theme music. Third episode?
You've been missing up two and three all night tonight.
I got to quit smoking that crack, man. It's going to be the death of me. All right. Guest of honor tonight, Owen Casey Stevens. How are you doing, sir?
Hi, folks. I'm doing well. Thank you for asking.
Appreciate you coming on. And our reliable co-host, Jacob Blackman. How are you, Jacob?
Always a pleasure.
All right.
And I got to say, Mike, once you call a show Owen Explains It All, I feel mildly obligated to be here. Because
it would be awkward if you were not. I think we have to.
We should bring another Owen. I guess
it's true. There are other Owens in the industry. If you're another Owen in the game industry or creative industry in general, if Owen Seiler or something wants to come on the show, let us know. We have a title for you.
This is true, and that would be preferable to either Jacob or me trying to do an Owen Casey Stevens impersonation. And if that didn't work, then we get to puppetry. I don't think anyone wants to see that. So I'm very glad you're here. Today we're. Finger puppets. Oh, and how are you?
I'm doing good, Mike. How are you? I have opinions. Let me tell you why you're all wrong.
Okay, so today we're talking about What If, also episode 3.
Yes, specifically episode 3. And I've been enjoying all of What If very much. But they... While they all have one thing in common that we can adapt to Starfinder, which I'll talk about in a minute, this specifically is for episode 3. And if you've not yet seen episode 3, as with all Owen Explains It All, since we're explaining it all, that will include spoilers. So if you have not yet seen episode 3, this one in particular has a couple of twists and turns that aren't really suggested by the title and aren't really suggested by the previews, right? What if Peggy Carter was the first Avenger? The title of that one sort of tells you that Peggy Carter is going to end up with the super soldier serum. What if T'Challa was Star-Lord? Sort of tells you T'Challa is going to be Star-Lord. What if the Earth's greatest heroes were killed? Doesn't really tell you what the big crux of that particular plot line is. So I think I've yammered on about it enough, but this one really does kind of bury the lead all on purpose. So if you want the discovery and the shock and the surprise and the M. Night Shyamalan witty twist moment, then you need to stop watching this until you watch that.
Yep, and not to put too fine a point on it, but there is a murder mystery in this episode. And if you don't want to know who the guy is doing the murdering, you need to change channels right now.
In fact, technically there are like 5 murder mysteries all crammed into 30 minutes. So
there's a whole lot of killing.
We're about to spoil who it is.
Yes, we are, because that is one of the things that we want to get to the explanation of. The other thing that I want to touch on, and I talked about this last time when we were talking about the Suicide Squad, is that once again, superheroes are a great place to borrow if you want stuff for a science fantasy setting. So I went into that in some length there. I don't think we need to do it at great length here, but that's sort of the point. That's what's going on. This is another example of how well that works. And Mike's muted.
Go ahead. It's fine.
Jacob, jump in there. So here's the thing. The mystery is first shown with someone injecting something into Iron Man that is supposed to be a anti-symptomatic for him, and he dies. And then Thor shows up to try and reclaim Mjolnir and has a arrow pointed at him by Hawkeye, and then the arrow is fired and Iron Man dies. Thor dies. And both Black Widow and Hawkeye are making a big deal out of, hey, this wasn't me. I didn't do this, even though I'm the one that injected Iron Man, or I'm the one that shot at Goldilocks, right? Because they don't know his name's Thor at the beginning. I'm not the one that did it. Video evidence to the contrary. And then a little while later, the Hulk swells up and explodes, which is it's the most surprising one, and it's the one that, you know, no one nearby is particularly blamed of, because the Hulk was supposed to be unkillable. And I will now finally tell you that this is all being done by Hank Pym in the Yellow Jacket armor, super shrunk down, but also using his scientific genius. So it's now canon that if he was angry enough and insane enough, Hank Pym can kill the Hulk by injecting more gamma radiation into him until his system is so swole with radioactive power that he pops like an overfull tick. And it is probably the most disturbing thing that they have shown us on What If yet. And I'm a big fan of the series so far, so I'm delighted about what's been going on. But and they don't figure out who is killing or why until the very end, where they discover it is Hank Pym, and he's doing it because in this reality, Hope Van Dyne, his daughter, was killed as an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. So that's the setup. The twist is that all of these things, where it looked like the killer would have to have set something up very, very carefully in advance, instead, the killer was right there. You just couldn't see him because he was too small. And that is a fascinating way to use shrinking powers. Shrinking powers as a way to sneak around places. We've seen that a whole lot. Shrinking powers as a way to gather intelligence and sneak out. We've seen that a lot. It is not a common shrinking trope for you to be able to be so small and still retain full strength and full offensive capability that you can kill people and be there and people just can't see you. And I think that is a wonderful use of shrinking powers. It is obviously at the extreme end of shrinking power. So to me, the way that this should be handled is through a shrinking ability that would have tiered abilities so that you don't have first level characters inserting themselves between the molecules of someone's adamantine armor and punching their heart till they have a heart attack. That's just not a first level ability. So one of the things that I have done on my blog, I have referred to as tiered powers for Starfinder. They were specifically for two theoretical settings that I played with. One's called Freedom Finder, which is sort of a superheroes in space setting. The other's called Gamma Finder, which is a very Wahoo mutants post-apocalyptic setting. But in both of them, the idea is that you can have a power with up to 10 tiers of ability, and you can use feats and archetypes and class features to pick up abilities or even have a class that grants it to you. And I've done super strength, and I've done telekinesis, and I've done telepathy, and I've done stretching. And I hadn't tackled shrinking prior to this because, you know, you get size small, you get size tiny. None of those seemed like they had that 10 levels capstone of real potency at the end. So I hadn't had an idea of where to take it beyond you get a little smaller and a little smaller. Now, having watched the show, I think the thing is that you do it as a tiered power, but at a certain point, and I'll have up an article Tuesday or Wednesday. It'll be either August 31st or September 1st, where I will expose these game mechanics to the full 10 tiers of shrinking. At some point, you become invisible. Even better, you become invisible in a way that detect invisibility does not locate, because it is not that you are present, but that all efforts to detect you pass through you. They just literally overlook you. And we can use the invisibility rules for a lot of the things we saw there, right? We saw that it was possible to try and figure out where the opponent was by hearing him. People were looking around for him. So you can do perception checks against stealth. It's just that that stealth is going to have that plus 20, plus 40 if you're not moving, bonus from invisibility. So if someone is anyone near your power level, when they're invisible, they will presumably already have also ranks in stealth, and it will be nearly impossible to detect them. One of the interesting things about Starfinder is that most of the detect anything powers, like detect magic, have wording in Starfinder that says, you can detect a magic womer on anything you can see. That wording is intentional in Starfinder. That means that if someone is invisible, you can't see them, so you can't detect magic and go, okay, there is definitely an invisible person in here because I'm picking up illusion magic where there shouldn't be any. And then you can zero in on them. In Pathfinder First Edition, that was a trick you could pull. 3-5 and a lot of the D&D variants. If you had an incredibly high-level rogue and they had a magic ring on them, you could say, well, I know that they've got to be in here somewhere. I'll detect magic. Okay, there's abjuration magic back in that shadow behind the tapestry. That must be where the rogue is. That doesn't work in Starfinder quite intentionally. You shouldn't be able to negate the most stealthy people in the world with a first level spell from a first level character. So this will be a series of powers, and there will probably come a point in which you are pretty small and you are basically, you can just say early on, right, you're considered to have cover, you're considered to have concealment, you're allowed to make a stealth check. We can tie that as well to, and here are some scenes from the original Ant-Man, which involves people going between the molecules of a plate of steel, which I presume is why Mike pulled it up.
Just trying to illustrate your point, sir.
Yeah, absolutely. We will be able to have, you know, maybe at tier 5, tier 6, you start being able to make stealth checks even without cover or concealment, but don't get a bonus, and then we can ramp up that bonus so we can go. The other thing we saw happen quite a lot was that Yellow Jacket would get big to add that to his punch, and we can also work that into your power. We can say, and you know, I'll do the math and I'll work it out, but as a easy example, you could say, hey, if you make a melee attack and become large, you must remain large until the beginning of your next turn, so there's now a drawback to it. There's a way that you might not want to do it, and you add, say, +2 damage per tier, which would be +2 at first tier all the way up to +20, and that should scale pretty well with bonus damage from things like supercharge weapon and overcharge and other options that exist in the game that cost a resource. In this case, the resource, we might do it as a spell. We might be able to come up with a spell that would access tiered powers. But the main thing is that I am not small. I won't have my bonus to AC that I presume will work into the power, and I won't be invisible, but I can add this damage as I punch you. And that is really all you need. A lot of the things that are normally built into shrinking in a lot of games, like you become weaker or you become slower or your carrying capacity is reduced, those don't apply to Ant-Man. Ant-Man retains his full strength at any size. And that, in many ways, makes that more advanced version of shrinking easier to emulate in a game system, because we don't have to say, you get slower. Well, no, you don't actually get slower, because you're just as strong. So you're simply taking a 30-foot movement instead of a run is one long 30-foot jump, because you are this big and like a flea or a tick, you can jump a ridiculous distance. We don't have to say you do less hand-to-hand damage. We don't, all the stuff that's normally an issue, we can just totally avoid and just say, hey, this works like, as it happens, Ant-Man does, that when you shrink, you retain your full strength, your full power, you're just smaller and smaller and smaller, have an easier time getting into places, and it is harder to notice you. Jacob, say something. Come on, get in here.
These rules could easily work in conjunction with the size-changing rules that Alex Agunas developed for Starfinder, which are available in the Advanced Occult Guide.
Yeah, that's true. He did a whole thing on micro-sized adventures, which, in addition to being able to shrink down small, also includes, like, let's say you shrink all of your characters and then suddenly they have to cross a hallway of a starship, and that hallway happens to have dust mites, which weren't a problem when they were, you know, 6 feet tall, but now they are nanite scale, and a dust mite can be a CR5 critter for you to fight. Yeah. So if you want a full advanced version of the rules, Jacob's exactly right. That's the occult skill guide is out there. It's for sale through Rogue Genius Games. There's the cover where you're fighting a giant piece of cheese. you might recognize the art from an artist that we have here on the show often, and as it happens now. And that's sort of the far end of things. You can absolutely take those rules. What I'm going to do on my blog is for something where you just want it to be a drop-in. Sometimes the size of the rules need to scale to their impact on a campaign. The shrinking rules that Jacob's referring to, that Agunas did, are great and complete and as complex as you would expect a set of rules that you say are great and complete to be. But you wouldn't want to adapt that whole module if all you want is to have one murder mystery with one shrinking villain and people are supposed to figure out that's what's going on. You then want a simpler set of rules that's faster, easier, and that you can then ditch out, right? It's like the Starship Combat rules in Starfinder take an entire chapter because that's a big part of the game. The chase rules for vehicles takes one page because it's assumed that you will occasionally throw a chase into a Starfinder game, but you will often want to do starship combat.
Yeah, chase rules are kind of a question, are kind of a holy grail for a lot of systems. It's kind of just, you know, they kind of, here's a few rules for that because it doesn't seem to play too much of a role.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And there's, you know, so the Starfinder core rulebook is already 400 pages long. Now, a lot of that you don't need to absorb all at once, right? Like if you're not playing or dealing with a spellcaster, you can ignore the entire spells list. If you don't happen to have a operative in your game, you can ignore the entire operative class list, etc. But even so, there's a lot of stuff in there that was expected to come up a lot, and you just have to make some decisions. So for a fast and furious pulp superhero level of game, or something like a Mutants and Masterminds game where, you know, you might or might not have anyone that has a shrinking power, and the wahoo over the topness is that you've got a sorcerer from the far-flung future, someone named after UCLA, and a guy with a lightsaber that he doesn't know to call a lightsaber. Maybe someone is playing a four-armed shrinking telepathic ape, and maybe they aren't, but you want the rules that will handle it well enough without getting into a lot of complexity about exactly how much are you going to weigh and how far can you jump and what is your lift capacity. The ease of being able to take what is technically a more complicated, greater power and introduce it as the standard, which makes sense in this case, is going to make it a lot easier to take that concept and adapt it to a game. But I mean, I could easily see someone running a game where, you know, maybe it is well known that, the space Atlantis assassins have the ability to shrink themselves down to macroscopic size. That entire group, that is their secret power, and no one else can get down to that size and still operate. And once you introduce that, that is a thing that players are always having to worry about. Is there something in here? Can they get to us? Do we have an airtight seal? Are we better off, you know, casting life bubble ourselves and sleeping in the cold, hard vacuum of space? Whatever it is they think they need to do, because it is easier to prevent scrying than it is to prevent someone who is the size of a speck of dust from being on your boot and writing that along to wherever you're going to be and listening in.
And there's a whole room of possibility when you have that kind of a size changing in a game. You know, there was maybe 20 seconds in one of the Ant-Man movies where you saw Hank Pym and Janet Van Dyne, you know, doing Cold War hijinks. Uh-huh. I've always wanted to see more of that because I'm a big sucker for superheroes in the Cold War, and but yeah, that is interesting, cool stuff.
So. And we've also got a nice. There's also a really good classic sci-fi element to it with Micronauts, because the whole idea of Micronauts was they were tiny heroes from a universe that is smaller than ours. Their planets were effectively the cells and atoms that make up our universe. So then they could cross over into ours, and they would be itty bitty, but they could still interact with us.
They would in fact be exactly the size of the Mego toy line that existed when they first started doing the comics. Although there have been two other entire series of Micronauts, and the Micronauts comic, the original Marvel, lasted longer than the Mego toy line did. Although that was adapted from, you know, Japanese toys that went much, much longer. For that matter, you know, if you want to combine these ideas, you're talking about 50s spy stuff and Micronauts. Imagine the other shenanigans you could get up to. Okay, I have taken a picture of the blueprints. I shrink myself down to be this size. I draw them all out on this dot. I put that dot over here. I go to full size, and then I put the dot on a cufflink. And I now have a way to make micro dots with a pen and pencil. And then either someone has to shrink down, or you have to have a giant microscope to be able to read the thing.
Yeah, you could really do a whole campaign with this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the nice things about looking to things like What If for inspiration, and that you can take a fresh idea, so a new take on things, and either go, ooh, that'll be cool for encounter 5 next week, or you can go, hey, that can let us play this game in a whole different way. And we're already familiar with the rules, and we know what we're doing. You know, I'm currently running what I call the Really Wild West game, which is a 1891 fantasy Old West post War of the Worlds Martian invasion, and I do it with Starfinder. And I've got several pages of house rules, but the core mechanics are still Starfinder. You play the Starfinder classes, etc. But we get a very, very different feel when it's, hey, a bunch of clanking automatons are trying to rob the train, and the big box that is the payroll happens to be a mimic and is the last line of defense. That just comes off differently than using the same rules to try and do something more like Star Wars or Guardians of the Galaxy. The other thing I wanted to talk about, What If, we were specifically focusing on episode 3. The other great thing What If does is give you options to play with if you're playing with Witch Warpers and alternate realities. So in Starfinder, there are specifically Witch Warpers. They were the third major spellcaster to come out that draw on the power of alternate realities and alternate probabilities to alter the world around them. So if they shoot a magic missile, it is less likely that they have just generated magic energy for a magic missile, and more, they have sucked a bolt of magic that was in an alternate reality and would be here if things had gone differently, and poured probability and energy into it until it becomes real. You could do a lot with all of the What If stuff with Witch Warpers and alternate realities. You could, for example, look at this as, okay, here's an opportunity where I've got a whole bunch of write-ups for heroes and angels and Knights of Galarian and other good guys, and those write-ups don't do me any good because my players don't attack them. Well, you have a Witch Warper do an experiment. His experiment goes wrong. It creates a gate. You go through that gate, and you are in the Star Trek Mirror Mirror universe where all the good guys are bad and all the bad guys are good. And then all those stat blocks that you've never been able to use to attack your players with are suddenly fair game. And they get to have the fun of facing a whole new set of villainy and possibly getting in touch with, you know, hey, our most powerful arch nemesis in our game is this guy. So if we're in a Mirror Mirror universe, clearly we ought to go talk to that guy because he'll be the greatest hero. And it, again, has that advantage of allowing you to take something that is familiar, that people already know who the players are and what the names are and what an angel is and what a devil is, and you flip it on its head. And I didn't want to take as much time to talk about that because that's going to be for all of What If. I think all three of the episodes we've seen so far do well in that regard, and that make a small change and see how that impacts things going out and creates a whole new reality. But I think it's absolutely, when you're talking about getting inspiration, while I wanted to do the first Owen Explains It All for What If number 3, 1, 2, and 3 are all great examples of the Witch Warper possibilities. And even if you don't want to have a whole adventure there, you know, have some fun with it. If a Witch Warper uses their ability to change the environment, you know, you can have a few magazine pages blow across the wind as they suck in a fog from a different world. And those magazine pages happen to mention that, you know, Galarian is the only planet left and every other planet in the universe has disappeared. And that doesn't have any actual impact on your game as far as what you need to have prepared or game rules, but it's something for the players to grab and chew on and talk about. And that's half the fun of playing a game.
Yeah, and I mean, the multiverse concept in general is, there are encyclopedia length blog, message board, IRC arguments about, you know, things happening in the multiverse. And if you're into the background of a setting, it opens up all kinds of possibilities for that stuff. So,
and since I don't think we'll ever take the time to do that whole season by itself, I'll also mention that if you're big on the multiverse in comics, the Disney Plus show Loki dealt with another possibility on a multiverse level, and that is having a time variance authority whose job it was to keep multiverses from existing at all, to keep everything on one solid timeline. And that is another brilliant thing that you can borrow if you ever need someone to show up as a random villain, right? Like, if the players have all been talking about how they're going to go fight the Star Dragon Tuesday. They're going to go fight the Star Dragon Tuesday. And then you've got that set up. And then at the last moment, they're like, you know what? Nah, we'll let someone else do that. And you need a new adventure out of it. Just grab an OCR appropriate creature, have it show up and say, hi, I'm from the alternate dimension reality fund. You guys are supposed to go fight a Star Dragon Tuesday and you're not. I'm going to need you to go take care of that or we will have to thrash you. And then either way, you've got an adventure out of it.
That is a pretty cool idea. Maybe the best Black Widow comic I ever read had her on a mission with the Secret Avengers, and things just go pear-shaped, and everyone gets killed. And at this last second, Rhodey pulls the secret gadget off his shoulder and throws it to her, and it's got some kind of clever name, like a reset switch. Sends her back in time, and she figures out why they lost the fight. And she actually, winds up jumping around 20, 30 different years in Marvel continuity, which is, kind of just, fun Easter eggs for old comics guys. And she uses the time traveling as the way to figure out how to beat their enemy, which I've always wanted to emulate in an RPG adventure, and I've never been able to figure out how to make that work without it just, having way too many options and, becoming a whole campaign unto itself.
The closest I've ever gotten to doing something like that is I was running a game that was a straight fantasy game. And it had been going for quite a while, and the players began to say, you know what, we're enjoying our characters, and we're enjoying your system, and we're enjoying the interactions, but we just want some sci-fi, or maybe science fantasy. We're tired of this being pure fantasy. We want guns, and I was like, okay, if you guys will trust me, give me a little more time, I can make that happen, and you can keep your characters in these interactions, but we will make it a more sci-fi game. And what I ended up doing was I got them to complete their quest, which was to find this ancient relic. And then I did a hard cut and told them, okay, you're all groggy, you're all waking up, and you all realize you are the descendants of those original characters 10 generations down the line, and you've done a memory reset for genetic memory to your ancestors who found that relic because you all need it now to stop this other villain. So everything that just happened is just your memory of a previous life, and now we will rewrite your characters, but you're still those people. You still have those feelings for each other, but now it's in a science fantasy reality, and now you know what planet you have to go grab the relic. And that was very, very popular, but it's the sort of thing that sort of evolved in play instead of it being the setup from the get-go.
Yeah, cool. Wait, we are heading towards the 30-minute mark, and we always promised this show was going to be a fast, fun, furious 30 minutes of madcap antics, and I think we're right about there. Jacob, you've been kind of quiet tonight, sir. Any thoughts, comments?
Considering it came up, I always felt that the mirror universe in Star Trek was an underutilized tool. I really feel that they could have done an incredibly amazing, just one season arc of television where you have the mirror universe attempting to conquer the regular Star Trek universe now that they've discovered it exists, until they do something to make it so that they can't dimensionally cross over anymore. Or defeat them or whatever.
And in fact, that season may still be coming at some day. The other thing I find interesting about the mirror universe, and I will hop out after this, is that as a concept, the mirror universe shows up at a lot of non-Star Trek places, right? There's the Crime Syndicate of America, which was the all-evil version of the Justice League. So instead of Superman, you've got Uberman. Yeah. And that is another classic world where pretty much everyone good was evil and everyone evil was good. And you get a heroic Lex Luthor out of it. So there are a lot of fun examples of that trope.
But it allows for a lot of fun crossover, not only crossover to see the what ifs of the multiverse, but also a little fun spy infiltration genre. Because what happens when your character is suddenly kidnapped by the other side and replaced with your alternate, who has to pretend to be your character as a spy?
Okay, that brings us to 30, I think.
So have fun with that.
And we will see you all again in 2 weeks for the fourth episode of Owen Explains It All. And we have no idea what it'll be about. We'll figure it out in the next 14 days, and I'll let you know. And until then, thanks for checking out the Band Podcast, and we'll see you next time.
Bye, folks.